And by releasing these rapists, which even the court termed were good Brahmins of good sanskar, Brahmin is an upper caste Hindu in the levels of Hindu castes. So when these people are released, Modi is only doing what he promised to do. So a dangerous precedent had been set when he was elected, and everything else that followed is only a natural consequence of that decision.
Now, Mrs. Ahmed, interestingly, they were freed on the day India was celebrating its Independence Day and hours after Prime Minister Modi spoke of women's empowerment. Now, is it fair to say that the BJP government has in India has failed minority Muslims?
It has definitely failed minority Muslims and definitely Muslim women. But then again, releasing them on the day of Indian independence does not say that it was that it's ironical or even like out of sync. It is not at odds at all in the Hindu imagination that is, you know, perpetuating right now in India. It is completely in sync with what is happening. As I said, Muslims here are not even considered humans. When they're not humans, it's hard to consider them as Muslim, as women. So a Muslim woman is not looked at as a woman. She is a Muslim, and she probably had to go through this tragedy. No one's conscience is being shaken when this is happening. So, I mean, it's not ironical that this happened on Independence Day. In fact, it feels like it was part of a plan, and it completely worked. On one hand, he's talking about feminine empowerment. And on the other hand, these rapists are being released, clearly emboldening the fact that there will be women empowerment, and there'll be an empowerment of Hindu upper caste women, while Muslim women should not even be considered women.
On that note, I would like to thank Mrs. Ahmed, research scholar and assistant professor at the University of Delhi, for being on the program. Now, let's see how people have reacted on social media.
Activist Yogita Bahayana says she has written a letter to Chief Justice of India demanding that 11 accused in Bilkis Bano case be sent back to jail, adding that it's happening with every Bilkis who fights for justice. Arfa Khanum Sherwani, a senior journalist, asked why Bilkis Banu's honor is less than any other Indian woman and why it doesn't shake the conscience of 1.3 billion Indians. Firebrand Indian parliamentarian Mahuya Moitra questions the loudmouth self-righteous TV anchors who haven't deemed the issue important enough to be discussed.
You're listening to The Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to The Subcontinent every Monday here on IRIB English Radio.
Almost a fortnight after marking the Chabahar Day and reaffirming his country's vision of making the Shahid Beheshti port in Iran's Chabahar a regional transit hub, Indian Minister of Ports, Shipping and Waterways, Sarbananda Sonowal, visited Iran just recently to assess the progress of the port's first phase of operationalization. The port, situated in southeastern Iran, has emerged as an important commercial transit hub and an economic route for India to reach landlocked countries such as Afghanistan, bypassing Pakistani ports.
Indian Minister of Ports, Shipping and Waterways Sarbananda Sonowal, who visited the Chabahar port during his four-day official tour of Iran earlier this week, said New Delhi is committed to the development of the strategic port, which sits at the mouth of the Gulf of Oman, into a regional and international transit hub. He informed that since India assumed operations of the port, it has handled over 4.8 million tons of bulk cargo, with shipments coming from countries such as Australia, Brazil, Romania, Russia, Ukraine, Thailand, Uzbekistan, etc. During the Indian minister's visit, the two sides agreed to form a joint technical committee to ensure the smooth functioning of the port. Sonowal said New Delhi and Tehran are working towards making the international north-south transport corridor the preferred route of trade between the two regions. He also handed over 6 mobile harbor cranes to the port authorities, aimed at further development of the port that has emerged as a key area of economic cooperation between Tehran and New Delhi despite U.S. sanctions. Iran's Deputy President Mohammad Mokhber, in his meeting with the visiting Indian official, emphasized boosting investments in the Chabahar port and said Iran welcomes the participation of foreign investments in the development of the port.
Chabahar Port is a transit gateway in southeastern Iran's Sistan-Baluchistan province that has emerged as an important regional and international transit hub in recent years, bringing India and Iran closer despite the ominous shadow of U.S. sanctions. Known for its strategic location, the port connects the Indian subcontinent with landlocked Afghanistan and Central Asian countries, offering attractive opportunities for cooperation between regional countries. The Indian minister's recent visit to Iran again shows how this port is defining geopolitics.
Indian Foreign Minister S.J. Shankar, in a newspaper interview last week, said the Chabahar port remains relevant and a logistical route for Indian supplies to Central Asia and Afghanistan. The statement was an affirmation of how seriously India takes the development of the strategic Iranian port despite the U.S. pressure and bullying. The interaction between India and Iran on the port started back in 2003, but it took more than a decade for them to make a concerted push, resulting in the signing of a Memorandum of Understanding in May 2015 for the development of the port and railways. This MOU translated into a formal 10-year contract for equipping and operating the strategic port that was executed during the Indian Prime Minister's visit to Tehran in May 2016. It was followed by Iran, India, and Afghanistan signing a trilateral agreement for the transportation of goods through the port. The activation of the contract faced multiple delays due to U.S. sanctions and New Delhi's reluctance to antagonize Washington. In February 2018, during then-Iranian President Hassan Rouhani's visit to New Delhi, the two sides entered into a short-term agreement to operationalize the port. In late 2018, India officially assumed the operations of parts of the port.
Now, to talk more on this, we are joined by Mr. Hussein Askari, Southwest Asia Coordinator for the International Schiller Institute from Stockholm. Now, welcome to the program, Mr. Askari. Now, Chabahar Port has emerged as a regional transit hub with shipments from different countries passing through it. Now, how important is it in the context of Iran's relations with India in particular and the region in general?
Yeah, I think the Chabahar port is one of the most important strategic ports in the, can say, in the Indian Ocean and the whole region. Not the only one, but it's one of the very important ones, although it's still in the beginning of its function. What is important here is that, I mean, for India and Iran, India sees Iran as a very important bridge, especially if you look at Iran geographically. Iran is on the Indian Ocean, but it's also located on the Caspian Sea and on the Gulf. Then you have Iran connected to the Indian subcontinent by land, Central Asia, the Caucasus, its neighbor, maritime neighbor of Russia, but also connected to Europe through Turkey. And of course, we have through Iraq and Syria to the Mediterranean. So this makes Iran a very unique, geographically, you know, positioned country in the world and for the world economy, but also for the region. And that's why India considers Iran as a very special partner in this sense.
Mr. Askari, Indian Minister of Ports, Shipping and Waterways, during his more recent visit to Iran, reaffirmed his country's commitment to the development of the strategic port. So what makes it so significant for New Delhi?
I think India has, I mean, they had a setback in Afghanistan because India was very much involved in Afghanistan, whereby the whole connection through Chabahar to Afghanistan was very significant. But after the withdrawal of the U.S. and NATO from Afghanistan and the Taliban takeover, India faced a setback. But now India is looking beyond Afghanistan, although it hasn't given up on that, into Central Asia and also to Russia. And therefore, India sees this as a very important connection, a bridge to Central Asia, to Russia, and further on. I mean, you have to think that India is not any country. India is going to be, or is already, the third largest economy in the world. And it has specific economic space it can legitimately take in the world and in the region. I don't like the geopolitical discussions about, you know, circumventing Pakistan, working against China and the Belt and Road. I think it's very important that India and the Indian economy is integrated into this whole region. It's important to note that while Mr. Sonowal, Minister of Ports and Shipping, was in Iran, the National Security Advisor of the President of India, or the Prime Minister of India, was a meeting with representatives from Central Asia. We also had a summit meeting between Mr. Modi and the leaders of the Central Asian nations. So India is looking at Central Asia as a very important economic partner, and these countries also look at India as an economic partner. But Iran will be the bridge from between India and those countries.
Mr. Askari, India has also proposed to include the Chabahar port in the framework of the international north-south transport corridor. Now, will it give a boost to the regional connectivity?
I think the world has changed so much in the recent months that this, although the north-south transport corridor, international transport corridor, has been there for many years as an idea, but now it has taken a very specific role as India is getting closer to Russia after the Ukraine crisis, and India did not submit to pressure from the United States and Europe to break ties with Russia and not import oil and gas. And therefore, it has become a significant aspect. But concerning connectivity, you have to look at this region. I mean, you look at the demographics, first of all. You have 200 million people, and more than 200 million in Pakistan. We have 80 million in Iran. We have in Turkey, 80 million. We have in Central Asia, although less. But these countries, these population, Afghanistan, 30 million, these populations are disconnected by large swaths of land, void, like deserts and other areas that need to be connected. You cannot connect the economies of those nations and the resources of these nations and connect them further to the world if you don't build a very efficient infrastructure like transport network, gas and oil pipeline network between all these countries. That would be a very important part, and all these roads, so to speak, will meet in Iran.
Last but not least, Mr. Askari, is the development of the Chabahar port, as well as growing connectivity between Iran and regional countries, another sign of how miserably U.S. sanctions have failed?
Yes, the whole policy of the West, the United States and the British, NATO, the whole geopolitical game, the great game, has crumbled, actually, since the withdrawal from Afghanistan. But now we have, for example, under the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, we have a completely new constellation of forces, economic, strategic forces coming together, and no sanctions will help. I mean, I hope the sanctions against Iran will be lifted and a nuclear agreement is reached. This would be useful for Europe and the other countries. But despite of that, we have now a new economic bloc in Eurasia, which is connected through the Belt and Road Initiative, the North-South International Corridor, and the Eurasian Economic Union. All these three infrastructure initiatives, if they come together, if we get rid of geopolitics, if India and Pakistan become friends again, if we can connect Iran, Pakistan, and India with oil and gas pipelines, we can connect Russia to the Indian subcontinent. If we remove all these geopolitical problems, there will be a solid economic bloc all the way from East Asia to Central Europe, Belarus at least, and also into the Mediterranean through Iraq, Syria, and the Gulf countries.
There you have it, Mr. Askari, Southwest Asia Coordinator for the International Schiller Institute from Stockholm. Thank you for being on the program, Mr. Askari. Now let's see how people have reacted on social media.
Sarbananda Sonowal, India's shipping minister, during his recent visit to Iran, said Prime Minister Modi was committed to make Chabahar port a regional trade, transit and international connectivity hub. Sitan Sibal, an Indian journalist, shares pictures of India's shipping minister calling on Iran's Vice President Mohammad Mokhber and Roads Minister Rostam Qasemi, saying the key focus is on use of Chabahar port. New Delhi-based journalist Rishikesh Kumar tweets about India handing over 6 mobile harbor cranes to Indian Ports Global Chabahar Free Trade Zone, saying it will expedite the work at Chabahar port.
And that was our episode about the controversy generated by the release of men accused of gang raping a Muslim woman in India, and also how the Chabahar port has emerged as an important regional transit hub and a key area of cooperation between India and Iran. Now, so till then, take great care.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program, Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
نفس خیلی پیچیده است. واقعاً موجود لایه‌لایه و پیچیده است. نفس خود ما.
Nafs or carnal soul is a very deep layered and complicated entity. Sometimes we are deceived by our nafs without being informed. Therefore, it is good for us to study about the nature of nafs and its impact on our lives. As Prophet Muhammad stated, the most dangerous enemies of a person are the Satan and carnal soul.
نفس میدونید مقصود از نفس اون بعد پست روح انسانه.
By carnal soul it means the lower animalistic nature of a human being. The human's soul consists of two important parts. One is the lower animalistic one, which consists of nafs or carnal soul, and the satanic temptations. Yet human soul has a higher aspect, which is the center of spirituality or heavenly attributes. If we develop our animalistic self, then gradually we will act like an animal that is only concerned with food and shelter. However, if we focus on our spiritual soul, we will move towards spirituality and highly divine attributes. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hojjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
The Prophet's Ahlul Bayt in the tyrant Yazid's court. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Condolences to you on the occasion of the first of the month of Safar, the day on which the children and women folk of the blessed household of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, were brought to Damascus, to the court of the tyrant Yazid, as captives in chains and fetters, along with the severed head of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, 20 days after the blood-curdling tragedy of Karbala. We have prepared an exclusive feature for you on this poignant occasion by focusing on the eloquent sermon of the martyred Imam's sister, Hazrat Zainab, peace upon her, that ripped off the mask of hypocrisy from the face of the ungodly Umayyad regime and exposed Yazid in his true heathen colors. After what happened in Kufa, when the Prophet's granddaughter and the survivors of the massacre of the Day of Ashura, including Imam Hussein's son and successor, Imam Zainul Abidin, peace upon him, were brought to the court of the tyrannical governor, Ubaidullah ibn Ziyad, even more tribulation awaited the Ahlul Bayt in Syria, since the people of this land, unlike Kufa and Iraq, had been brainwashed so thoroughly by decades of Umayyad rule that they barely had any idea of the position of the Prophet's progeny and the genuine principles of Islam. Allama Sheikh Fakhreddin writes in his book Al-Muntajab that according to Imam Zainul Abidin, peace upon him, "We were taken tied with ropes towards the court of Yazid ibn Muawiyah. My neck and that of my aunt, Umm Kulthum, was tied with one rope, while the hands of my elder aunt, Zainab, and my sister Sakine, peace upon them, were bound along with other ladies of the Prophet's household. We were at times whipped for walking slowly, and when we reached the court, we saw Yazid sitting on a throne, while in front of him lay the head of my father, Imam Hussein, peace upon him, in a golden tray. He had a cane in his hand and was showing disrespect to the severed head. The tyrant was elated at the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, peace upon him. He openly wished that if only his infidel ancestors, who, in trying to attack the Prophet, had been slain in the battles of Badr and Uhud, were alive this day to witness how he had humiliated the Prophet's household, he went on to recite the following couplet as further proof of his lack of faith in Islam. The Hashemites played the game of kingdom. Neither any message descended from heaven nor revelation. This blasphemy, Hazrat Zainab, peace upon her, could no longer bear the sight of the accursed Yazid disrespecting the severed head of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, by striking the lips with a cane. As her grief-stricken younger sister Umm Kulthum flung herself to the severed head of her brother, Hazrat Zainab started one of her most eloquent sermons that had a profound effect on the gathering. She said, "All praise belongs to God, the sustainer and preserver of the universe, and may his blessings be showered on my grandfather, Prophet Muhammad. The Holy Quran says in Ayah 10 of Surah Rum, 'Then evil was the end of those who wrought evil, for they belied the signs of God and mocked at them. O Yazid, you think that you have made our life miserable, an existence unbearable, and you have made us prisoners? And because we have been presented in your court, you feel elated? You think that we have been disrespected and dishonored by God, and that you have been honored and elevated to this position by Him? This apparent success of yours is a result of your worldly might, and this makes you puffed with pride at our disaster. You feel that you have conquered the whole world and feel that you are well set in power and control. Only time will teach you a bitter lesson." Ayah 177 of Surah Al-Imran points out to people like you who are destined to go to hell when God says, "Let not those who disbelieve think that our giving them respite is good for themselves. We only give them respite so that they may increase in sins, and for them is a disgraceful chastisement." In continuation of her memorable sermon, Hazrat Zainab, peace upon her, said, O you, the son of freed slaves, is this your justice that the ladies of your household remain veiled and we, the Prophet's family, should be paraded thus? You have insulted our dignity. Our faces have been unveiled. Your villainous soldiers have exposed us to public view. And all along the journey, people have looked at us. We do not have our male companions anymore to come to our rescue. O Yazid, your misdeeds have clearly proved your rebellion towards God and the message the Holy Prophet brought to this world. And this has proved beyond doubt that you refuse to honor the prophetic message sent by God. This behavior of yours does not come as a surprise, for your ancestors chewed the liver of the Prophet's uncle, Hamza ibn Abdul Muttalib. Hind, the wife of Abu Sufyan, mutilated his body, had his liver taken out, sucked it and quenched her thirst for vengeance at the Battle of Uhud. You belong to this clan, which always opposed the prophets and collected armies from various clans to oppose him. The descendants of such rabble and monsters are the enemies of God and his prophet, and are expected to be merciless and deadly, since violence is part of their nature. In continuation of her sermon, the prophet's granddaughter said in the court of the tyrant in Damascus, Remember, your disgusting deeds are the results of your inherent animosity and malicious nature, which are the cause of so much vice in your character. This vengeance is due to this nature, and you have borne revenge in your heart ever since the Battle of Badr, in which your elders were killed because of their opposition and attack on the Prophet. He who looks upon us with animosity, malice, and revenge is clearly an enemy of the holy Ahlul Bayt. He who takes pleasure in taunting us proves his infidelity towards the Messenger of God. And besides, you take pride in saying that you have killed the grandson of the Prophet and imprisoned the members of his family. You do not consider this as a sin of extraordinary magnitude. On the contrary, you say that had your forefathers seen this performance of yours, they would have been filled with pride and would have said, O Yazid, you have avenged us. Hazrat Zainab, peace upon her, then added to the surprise of the whole court and the embarrassment of the tyrant, O Yazid, you are happily disrespecting the head of Abu Abdullah al-Husayn, peace upon him, by caning his lips. Do you not know that these are the lips the Prophet has kissed on several occasions? On my soul, you have deepened our wounds by shedding the blood of the chief of the youth of paradise, the son of Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him. O Yazid, if you have a heart to take into account your nefarious deeds, you would surely wish that your arms be paralyzed and severed from the elbow, and you would have exclaimed, Would that my parents had never given birth to me. You would have realized that God is displeased with you and the Prophet has become your enemy. O God, restore us our rights. Avenge those who have oppressed us and make your wrath descend on those who have broken their pledge, killed our kith and kin and our relations and supporters,
and have disgraced us. O Yazid, you have done what you wish to do, but remember that you are doomed to perish and you will be cut to pieces. Then, on the day of judgment, you will be taken into the presence of the Prophet and you will be burned with the sins you have committed, with shedding the blood of his progeny and dishonoring the sanctity of his family. You will be taken in the presence of the Prophet to a place where his family members will be gathered, and you will undergo a horrible punishment, and then there will be no escape for you and your accomplices. O Yazid, do not be inflated with pride after slaying the Prophet's progeny. Do you know what the Quran says about such people who have been martyred? Think not of those slain in God's way as dead. Nay, they live, finding their sustenance in the presence of their Lord. What you heard was the moving sermon of the Prophet's granddaughter in the court of Yazid following the arrival of the noble captives of Karbala on this day in Damascus, a city where the less than 4-year-old daughter of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, named Ruqayya, peace upon her, was destined to attain martyrdom in the dungeon. The terrified tyrant, sensing the people's sentiments against him, released the Ahlul Bayt and allowed them to return to Medina. But before leaving Syria, Hazrat Zainab, peace upon her, held the first formal mourning ceremony for the martyrs of Karbala, which the faithful have continued to observe ever since in Muharram and Safar.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome to the program, Islamic Upbringing. This is your host, Zainab Askari. Dear listeners, I have with me a very special guest. We have with us Mr. Salman Akavi with me. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, sir.
Thank you very much.
Dear listeners, Mr. Salman Nakavi is a faculty member of Al-Mustafa University and a researcher in the field of Hausa Almi of Qom. Thank you so much for accepting the invitation.
It's a pleasure to be on the show again.
So we discussed about the domains of behavior and some of the relationships you can teach your child. And the last relationship that we were talking about was how you can help a child develop a relationship with others. What next do we have in these relationships?
The various relationships that have to be managed by any human being.
Yeah.
And especially We have to bring up our children in a manner that they can manage those relationships. Basically, we have four relationships, as we mentioned. And we were talking about the relationship with other human beings. Apart from our relationship with ourselves, then we have the relationship with the environment, which we need to talk about in detail. Then we have the general relationship with Allah Almighty, the Creator. And all these four special relationships or specialized relationships are subsumed under that grand relationship that we have with Allah Almighty. And when we talk about Allah Almighty as the Creator of mankind, the Sustainer, our Lord, worthy of being worshipped, He has authority over us. He is our Wali.
Yes.
The extension of that wilayat is in the form of the wilayat of the Imams, the infallible Imams.
All right.
Of course, before that is the wilayat of the Holy Prophet.
True.
I do not use the term guardianship for the term for the translation of wilaya. Wilaya is much more than that.
All right.
It's not just guardianship.
So it's an umbrella term that guardianship also comes under this.
Yes, wali is not
confined to guardianship.
Not confined. Maybe an aspect of it is guardianship.
All right.
So wilayat is a term of Arabic, of the Quranic Arabic, which may not be, which we may not be able to translate properly.
All right.
In English. Or any other language for that matter. Of course, the languages which are rich, have the Arabic script, like Urdu, like Persian, they can employ the term wilayat as it is.
Yeah.
In English, we also should use the word wilayat because it is a very important concept.
All right.
It is the extension of the wilayat of Allah Almighty.
All right.
And it doesn't fall under the purview of the special relationship. Yes, when we are talking about the special relationship with Allah Almighty, that is the relationship which we have in the form of devotional worship and practice.
True.
And this is what we have to ingrain in our child's mind also.
Exactly.
And its behavior.
So how
But there is something beyond that, and that is wilayat of Allah Almighty.
Yeah.
It encompasses all our relationships.
Exactly. So how do we teach that to our children? I'll ask you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I have Mr. Salman Naqvi with me in the studio, and we're talking about the relationships that we need to teach our children. So you were talking about the relationship of wilaya.
Yes. So wilaya, as I said, of the without holding on to the hablullah, which is wilaya, the rope of Allah, as it is mentioned in the Quran, that is wilaya. Without clinging on to that, without clutching on to that, we cannot expect the message of tawheed to come down to earth.
All right.
And this is a very important thing which we have to inculcate in our children. Yes, we do that when we take them for the programs which are held in commemoration of the Imams, especially the commemoration or the memory of Karbala,
okay.
Imam Hussein, his companions,
all right,
their great sacrifice. That is, of course, something which we do from the day our child is born. We try to ingrain a relationship with Imam Hussein, with the Ahlul Bayt al-Islam, from the day he is born.
Yeah.
Even it is said that one of the rituals which is carried out by which is recommended, that the turba of Imam Hussein is given to the newborn child.
Yeah.
So that relationship is developed from the day the child comes
is born, actually, yeah.
And that has to be deepened,
yeah,
and become entrenched in his
day by day,
in his mind, in his feelings, in his actions.
True.
So yes, we take him for commemoration of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein and the other imams, or on the day of on their birth anniversaries. We remember them,
yeah,
and we remember how they played the role that they were supposed to do as the wali, as the imam,
yeah,
imams of this ummah, were wronged by the ummah to a great extent. But the important thing is that it should not be a just ritualistic memory.
All right.
And we have to develop the fact this
the relationship.
The, that relationship, which, as I said, encompasses my all my four relationships.
Yeah, yeah.
And the wilaya is the basic essence of all four
relationships.
Relationships. I mean, even in our dealings with Allah Almighty, specifically, we talk about tawassul.
Yeah.
We talk about the intercession of the imams.
Yeah.
We talk about how we can inculcate in our children that when they want to speak to Allah Almighty, they ask for the intercession,
yeah,
of the Ahlul Bayt.
True.
We prime them. We make them think of Allah Almighty from the point of view of the Ahlul Bayt.
All right.
With their attitude, with their vision, that, yeah, is very important, because when we want to understand Tawheed,
yeah,
the unity of Allah Almighty, the uniqueness of Allah Almighty, the best possible picture that can be provided for mankind is through the Ahlul Bayt.
All right.
So we want to our children to understand Tawheed through the eyes of the Ahlul Bayt.
All right, so developing a relationship with Ahlul Bayt is actually taking back our children to Tawheed, developing the concept of monotheism within them. I'll talk more on that note with you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
Ya muqdi al-khayrat, ya muqdi al-khayrat.
Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam said, O nation of Shia, teach your children the poems of Al-Abdi, because he was a follower of the religion of Allah.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm your host, Zainab. And today we have with us Mr. Salman Naqvi, and we're discussing about the relationships that we need to develop within our children. Yes.
If we analyze the relationship of wilaya, when we talk about the wilaya, the authority, if we want to explain what wilaya is, it has two aspects.
All right.
That is important that our children must understand. That one, when is a person called a wali who has authority over us?
Yes.
As the Quran says that if the Holy Prophet makes a decision, then you have no right to challenge him.
True.
His decision is the final decision.
True.
He has the final word in all our dealings.
Even nobody has authority over him.
Over us. An-Nabi awla bil-mu'minina min anfusihim.
Okay.
The Holy Prophet has authority over all of us.
True.
So this concept, this mindset, this attitude has to be ingrained in the behavior, the mindset of the child from the very beginning. And we have to understand, why is the Prophet the wali? Why is Allah Almighty the wali?
Okay.
Why does he have authority? Why do we accept him to be the wali? Because he has the those attributes of knowledge, of power, of being merciful,
yeah,
and so many other attributes that are there in the Holy, in Allah Almighty.
True.
That makes him worthy of our adorance, of our glorification,
yeah,
and most important, our obedience to him.
Exactly.
In the same manner, amongst the human beings, whoever is the closest to the Holy to Allah Almighty in the, his attributes,
mm-hmm,
the Holy Prophet is the prophet because he is worthy of being the prophet.
Exactly.
He has excelled in human behavior, in his human nature, and he's achieved closeness and proximity to Allah Almighty.
All right.
So he becomes closer to Allah Almighty. And then on the other side is that he has those proximity to Allah. And as a result of that, he commands our respect and our love, and he commands our obedience.
All right.
So this is what has to be inculcated. Where does it start? The smallest unit of society is the family.
All right. And charity begins at home.
That family unit has to show that authority.
Exactly.
Show that authority in practice. The father is the head of the family.
Yeah.
He's the continuation of the wilayat of Allah.
True.
The imams. At this level in society, it is the father who is the fatherly figure who has to be respected.
Right.
Why should he be respected? We shall talk about that.
Inshallah, we'll talk about that in another session. Thank you so much for being with us. And thank you so much for providing us such meaningful information. So this is not enough that since you are a Muslim, you are a believer, and your child should follow you as such without a research, without just a blind faith. You have to develop all those relationships within a child. And that's important, as Mr. Naqavi explained all that. Thank you so much, Mr. Naqavi, for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. In case you have any questions for us, you have any feedback, please feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. You can also find us on these social media platforms by just searching Call of Islam Radio. You can also download our programs on our official website, that's www.parstoday.com. Until another session, fi amanullah, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life. A way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. Islam solves all of our problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.